You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome to the Transfer Window. This is the podcast that not only takes you inside the biggest deals at the biggest clubs in world football, but brings you insight and analysis on the issues that matter every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. I'm Jonah McFarlane and joining me are pundits extraordinaire Duncan Castles and Ian McGarry. On today's Transfer Podcast, we look ahead to an incredible Sabbath of action so enticing that we've decided to rebrand it Supersize Sunday. Although fear not, Big Sam, his pint of wine and atrocious football will still thankfully be consigned to the bin. We take a deep dive into Manchester United's battle with Liverpool and ask if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's men can inflict a serious wound in their bitter rivals' championship hopes. And with a Carabao Cup final of Chelsea v Man City on later in the day, we create an incredible combined 11 from all four teams. Hello Podders, Johnny McFarlane here. I think it's enormously important with this podcast that I allow you to listen to a small fraction of Wednesday's podcast before this one starts. Otherwise, some of the comments and humour probably might fly above your head. It'll make sense by the end of the podcast. Okay, we've got a question here from @swappppc. Duncan, one horse-sized Jurgen Klopp or 10 duck-sized Jurgen Klopps? Who would you rather fight? Let it be said that we don't get the good, intelligent questions here at the Transfer Window podcast.
Well, I'm a pacifist, so I don't want to have a physical fight with anyone. But if I had to choose between 10 ducks and one horse, I think I'd probably go for the 10 ducks rather than the horse, because the horse is going to be a good bit bigger than me and it might clippity-clop all over the top of me.
It's good to see you're not quackers.
I've suddenly got this image of Duncan surrounded by 10 ducks saying, "Not the face, not the face."
Well, guys, Sunday sees an absolutely titanic encounter as Manchester United welcome Liverpool to Old Trafford. They're, of course, bitter, bitter rivals, and United will be desperate to put a dent in Liverpool's opportunity to win their first title in nearly 30 years. So, I suppose the question is, Duncan, can Manchester United continue this level of unbeaten form in domestic competition and win this game?
Well, I think they'll have a good chunk of the country supporting them, which is unusual for Manchester United, because there does seem to be a lot of people who would be quite amused by the idea of Liverpool failing to win the Premier League title again. I think it's a really interesting game to see how the two managers approach it. I don't think Liverpool have been playing very well recently. I think the Champions League game in midweek was another example of that. I saw a lot of people describing it during the game as them being miles on top of Bayern, even in the second half. And I think in the second half, for about 35 minutes of the second half, they were up 40% of the possession and hadn't had a single shot at goal. All their shots came at the end of the game. In total, Neuer made two saves in the match. Neither of them particularly great saves. I think one of them was probably not even going in the net anyway. I thought Bayern took elements of the way that Manchester City played at Liverpool earlier in the season, in that they decided that it was a good idea to hold the ball near their own penalty area, pass the ball near their own penalty area and draw Liverpool to them. and then try and play across the forward, above the forwards, and through the lines and create chances that way. And they played pretty well, and they had control of that match for long periods. And I'm intrigued to see how Klopp goes to this game, because I think he'll be tempted to play defensively. I think he'll be tempted to say a point is a good result here, and set up for a point and then try and grab a goal on the counter, using the quality of our forwards. And I think the one positive of the Bayern game was there were periods of the first half in which the front three for Liverpool were combining creatively in a way that I hadn't seen them for quite some time, albeit they couldn't get the ball in the net. Their shooting was poor. The intelligence and the originality of some of their passing was at a level we hadn't seen for a long time.
Duncan, it appears that there's been an alien landing in your vicinity there.
Duncan, just check, are there any ducks under the desk?
Low-flying ducks in a B-17 bomber, yeah.
There's 10 of them, just shout, square goal!
I think that the problem for Klopp, and the other interesting side of this, is that Solskjaer's team has clearly shown itself to be best as a counter-attacking side. You know, for all the talk about we're going to play the Manchester United way and we're going to go out all out and score goals, the games where they've been really impressive, Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, they've actually been quite disciplined in their defending, and they've used pace on the break to get chances. I mean, the victory over Chelsea, they ended up with less than 35% of the possession. I think they only had one shot on goal in the entire of the second half after they got their two-goal lead and sat on it. So Solskjaer, you'd think, would be tempted also to sit back and use pace on the break as the best way to go at Liverpool. So we might end up with a very cagey game in the sense that both managers decide to play it pragmatically, and that a draw wouldn't be a bad result, and the, you know, the aim of their game plan will be to catch the other side in the break.
And there has been huge, and understandably, huge hype on this game, based in the tribal rivalry, clearly, based in the permutations of who are favourites or not to win the Premier League title, and the effect that the result of this one match could have potentially on the eventual outcome. Now, Manchester United are playing at home. That's probably what makes the game slightly more difficult to predict, because Solskjaer is kind of in a win-win situation, in the sense that if he beats Liverpool, then obviously that dents the title hopes, but at the same time, enhances Manchester City's. So you'd have to ask United fans who they'd want rather win the title, one or the other. If he draws the game, then his credentials are boosted once again to get the job full time. And I'm pretty sure that he's not even contemplating losing. Now, Klopp, I think Duncan's right, will be pragmatic. He knows his team are lacking sharpness and momentum. We saw a lot of that in the midweek tie against Bayern Munich, a team who were very, very tactically well-organised and disciplined, but Liverpool still failed to break them down at Anfield. And again, this is why I'm going back to the Old Trafford factor. And so Liverpool need momentum, desperately need to regain that sort of, you know, irresistibility that they had a few weeks ago when they were scoring freely and looked to have all the confidence in the world. Obvious as it may sound, an early goal for either team will probably predict quite accurately the outcome of the game, because either one of these teams having to chase the ball and chase the game will leave themselves exposed at the back, and therefore with the counter-attacking speed which both sides have, chasing the game would not be something which they'll want to do. especially in the first, if, as I say, a goal comes in the first half, your game plan never really allows for you losing the first goal, because that would be negative for the manager. There will be a plan B if that happens, but the plan A is always that you're going to score first. That usually results in games of this intensity of there being no scoring for a long period, unless there's an error, unforced error, or a penalty, or whatever. So look, there's a lot more writing on this, I think, for Liverpool than there is for Manchester United. So you can read that as Klopp, if Klopp wins it, then they become the team that they possibly were a few weeks ago. If Manchester United win it, then it's, you know, basically sticking the Vicky up at their oldest and most bitter rivals with regards to their title bid. For that reason, in terms of how this game will go, I think it will be cagey. I think it will. There's so much at stake for both clubs, both teams, both managers. But I do believe that Manchester United being at home is an advantage in this case, and will see their players feel more confident and probably play a bit more freely than Liverpool have been of late.
The interesting thing you mentioned, plan B, is that what we've seen with Solskjaer is he's been able to come up with very good tactical plans to upset opponents from the start of games, but he's really struggled when the opponents have done something different during matches. And you'd think for Jurgen Klopp that is an invite to try and do something unexpected, because if he can set Liverpool out, either start the game in a way that Solskjaer doesn't expect, or change system during the game in a way Solskjaer doesn't expect, you'd think he could take an advantage there. But I'm not sure Klopp is particularly adept at doing that anyway. I think he basically has a game plan and a way of playing, which is obviously takes a lot of training ground development, takes a lot of practice with the players. You see, for example, how long Fabinho took to adapt to being a Liverpool player, and it's very the same with Andy Robertson. It's very clear that Klopp wanted them to understand the system and the pressing moves and the passing angles they use before he would put them in a starter. So I think it's quite hard for him to change during games. And then the other big question about this match is of course whether Jamie Carragher will keep his window wound up on the way home from the stadium.
Okay, we're going to move on now to the Super Size Sunday special quickfire round. And what we're going to do is have a combined 11 from all four teams. So that's City, United, Chelsea and Liverpool. We're going to play in a 4-3-3, and we're going to start with the goalkeeper. Ian, who's your goalie?
Thank you very much, my friend, for giving me the easiest choice of this particularly difficult quickfire round. Whoever came up with this idea is clearly an idiot. I take full responsibility for that. I don't think there's any real competition in goal. We've seen that both Alisson Becker and Kepa are error prone. Ederson, I think, has been excellent this season, and of course his playing out from the back is great. I think still the best goalkeeper in the Premier League is James Milner, and David De Gea for me definitely would be my starting goalkeeper out of the four, just for everything, utterly reliable, brilliant, instinctive goalkeeper, and incredibly safe in terms of giving the defenders in front of him confidence. So yeah, De Gea plays in goal for me.
Now, Mr. Castles likes a very specific way of doing this. So I'm just going to check with you, Duncan. You want to go left back first?
That is the traditional way of writing.
The traditional Castles way.
Yes.
Okay. Let's hear your left back then, sir.
Andy Robertson would be my left back. More for his attacking qualities. I think the Bayern game was a bit of a shock to the system for him. He got caught out by Serge Gnabry early on and wasn't particularly confident in the way he played. But left back, as it quite often is a problem position for a lot of the Premier League teams, certainly is for Manchester City, who are looking to recruit there. Chelsea are better with an attacking perspective at Marcus Alonso, and you know my thoughts on Luke Shaw at Manchester United, so it's an easy call, Andy Robertson.
Okay, Ian, we're going to the left centre-back, or just a centre-back. Let's not overcomplicate matters.
Indeed.
In a complicated enough quickfire round.
Well, I think we know that Chelsea and Manchester United are much poorer in terms of players in this position. So I will put Aymeric Laporte, who I think has been progressively improving throughout the season and now looks to be a very assured, commanding centre-back. So one of my centre-backs would be Laporte.
And a left-footer to boot, so he does actually fit into that left-sided defence.
I do try.
You've done this before. That's why you're a Sunday supplement legend, Ian. Right, Mr. Castles, centre-back.
Well, if Laporte's getting one of the choices, then you're going to have Virgil van Dijk in there to cover for his mistakes, because I think Laporte's strength as a centre-back for Pep Guardiola is how well he passes the ball, which is exceptionally good, not only because he's left-footed and he wants to have a left-sided player hitting passes there, but his ability to hit long diagonals is probably the best in the league for a player in this position. But Van Dijk is more of a true defender, and you know, no shortage of passing skill and ability in the ball, but he does have that all the elements of a centre-back you'd like in terms of physicality, a little bit of nastiness, and being able to see other people's errors and get in and use his pace to make up for them. So Van Dijk could be the top choice centre-back.
A bit of needle there from Castles once again, Mr. McGarry.
Indeed.
Not half stuck in the boot in today.
Well, you know, what goes around. just watch out for those ducks in your area, Duncan. I've been training them up, commando style. Or I should say, marine commando, obviously.
Oh, dear. Let's hope everybody's listened to the Wednesday show or none of this will make any sense whatsoever. Right back.
In days gone by, and I don't mean the days of black and white television, this would have been a very easy choice because Dave Azpilicueta, as he's known to his teammates, has been, you know, sort of fairly consistently the best right back or right sided of a three defender in the Premier League. But he seems to be slipping in terms of his own very high standards. And so in that case, I will choose a young man who's rising in his own standards, and that is Liverpool's Trent Alexander-Arnold, who, again, like Andy Robertson, probably is slightly better in his attacking than he is in his defending, but his defending is improving. And also, he is someone who plays very well in this particular formation because it does allow him freedom to move fairly easily from defence into attack and overlap. So, and even inside forward as well, if required, depending if the plays is based on the left side of the field. So Alexander Arnold for me at left back.
Okay, Duncan, take a quack at a defensive midfield pivot.
Should we just say, Johnny, at this point, if anyone hasn't listened to Wednesday's podcast, it is essential listening for you now. Just rewind, listen to Wednesday, and then come back and listen to today.
And you might actually laugh at a Johnny McFarlane joke. I can't guarantee it, but you might.
Unlikely.
Defensive midfield is actually a very tough one to choose because there are a lot of really strong defensive midfielders between
James Milner.
Four teams, apart from Liverpool. Apart from Liverpool, you have to struggle along with Jordan Henderson. Which kind of shows you where James Milner's real value is, that he can't hold down a place ahead of Jordan Henderson. The obvious choice would be Fernandinho, who is superb and absolutely pivotal to Manchester City. But I am going to go for N'Golo Kante, even though Maurizio Sarri doesn't feel he should be playing there. I think if you had the choice between the two, you would pick Conte because he's got a broader range to his game. He's more mobile. He can do pretty much all the things Fernandinho can do. But he gives you that that sort of body and a half as opposed to just one player in the midfield. And it's one of the huge mysteries of football that Maurizio Sarri has still not decided to change his system. After all the pressure he's come under and all the problems he's had at Chelsea to bring Conte back in there and replace the flailing, ailing Jorginho.
Ian, centre midfield, who fits the bill?
I have Paul Pogba. Someone, obviously, whose range of passing has been shown to be excellent in all shapes and forms in recent weeks. He's a game changer because of his goal threat and his ability to assist with the most deft pass, which is going to be essential in this particular combined 11, because I've got a good idea who is going to be playing in the front three. So, Pogba for me on the left side of the pivot.
And,
I think you can get away with Pogba because you've got Conte behind him to cover up for his complete lack of defensive activity. But again, a very tough choice this. You just look at the Manchester City options and you've got Kevin De Bruyne coming back from injury. You've probably got to exclude him because he hasn't played many games this season. But in terms of potential, absolutely top of at the top of a very strong list. You've got Bernardo Silva, who I think has been arguably the best attacking or offensive midfielder in the division this season. Absolutely fundamental to City, but I think I'm just going to go for David Silva because of his big game ability on top of doing all the difficult stuff well and the some senses the easier defensive stuff very well too. And I think if you're asking me for a player of the year nomination, I'd probably go for David Silva, and I think David Silva deserves to get one of the player of the year awards simply because of the quality that he's been in the English Premier League throughout his entire career, and I'm not sure he's ever going to get one. Suspect he won't win it this year, and I suspect he might never get one. So I'll have David Silva in this team.
Okay, Ian, we're going to go to left wing.
Again, this is the embarrassment of riches for this team, especially divided over the four teams of Super Size Sunday. I guess I'm sort of split between Hazard and Mane. Mane for sheer pace and ability to score and assist. And also one of the few Liverpool players who I think is on form at the moment and can be a match winner. Hazard, for sheer quality in all departments, we know all about him. I don't even have to explain to any of our cultured listeners those qualities. But I'm going to go for Mane in this instance because I feel like he he is a game-changing player in terms of goals or assists and the pace on the counter as well. So I'm going to put Mane on the left side of the three.
Duncan, on the right side?
A huge vote of confidence in Mane, putting him ahead of Hazard, but I think it's deserved, or at least credible in the level he stepped up to this season. I think he has, for a lot of the season, been the best attacking player for Liverpool, which is a surprise. And it shows that he's still on an upward trajectory. Right-hand side, I think you have to go for Raheem Sterling. Arguably the most consistent attacking player in the division this season. Ability to score goals, ability to set up goals, can play right or left. I think Guardiola's tried him at the centre, that hasn't worked yet, but you could see that in the future as being something he could develop, and just comes up with the goods at important times again and again and again.
Ian, top us off. Piece de resistance. Who's the striker?
Bizarrely, not an embarrassment of riches in terms of your traditional goal-getter. Chelsea have struggled in that position all season. Liverpool have been playing a false nine, effectively, for most of the season. Excuse me. And Manchester United are getting goals from Martial, who is either playing the left or the right, and coming in side. Rashford's been a bit hit and miss. So I think Sergio Aguero is really the only realistic choice in this super size combined 11. Record goal scorer for Manchester City, etc. A true poacher who can also, as we saw in the demolition of Chelsea, hit them from 25 yards, etc. as well. So all-round striker, I think. Put Aguero up top on that team, I'd see them take on anyone in the world.
Yeah, it's a fantastic team. I'm not sure about the pecking order in the dressing room. Well, it certainly fitted the bill. Sorry, Duncan. I apologise.
Get yourself into the Daily Record offices and go and edit some copy.
Okay, yes. Well, it's time to slam this particular transfer window shut. But fear not. We'll be back on Monday to fulfil all your podcasting needs. To continue the debate, we are all on Twitter. We've, of course, got our own Transfer Window official account, which you can find and follow at Transfer Podcast. I'm at Johnny R. McFarlane, and more importantly, our pundits are at GarboSG and at Duncan Castles. If you like the podcast, and we know thousands of you do, do us a favour, go online to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast and give us a 5-star review. That helps us reach as many listeners as possible. Until Monday, thanks for listening.